Switch off your electron microscope, because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome your host, David Innes.
That plucks the grain of truth and makes it into the pie of lies. Or plies. Your grains of truth today. Tech fans will be delighted at getting the new iPhone as it now has a new hat. And a classic geologist pickup line, you must be a metamorphic rock because you have nice cleavage. And now to introduce our panellists for this episode, it's over to the Stitch in Time himself, Tim Redmond.
Conservatorium Griffith University in Queensland, representing music, it's Matthew Hadgrove. From Monash University, representing animals, it's Kerry Farnsworth. From the University of Tasmania, representing monsters, it's Scott McAteer. From Charles Sturt University, Wagga Wagga campus, representing heroes, it's Rob Lloyd!
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. I award points to the panellists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is the Turchokan. It's a Malteser stuffed in a Tim Tam, stuffed in a wagon wheel, stuffed in a Lamington, stuffed in a cake, wrapped in cherry rice.
You're shocked, don't you?
I can taste the diabetes from here. Before we begin the quiz, there is a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panelists' topics? Music, animals, monsters, and heroes. And we'll come back to the end to this at the end of the program. But I will give you a clue. Nikola Tesla is your clue for this particular challenge. But let's begin as we would round one, which is called Right Said Ted. Each player must give a Ted-style talk on a topic relating to their field. Matthew Hadgrove is first, and your topic is that popular music is directly responsible for global warming. Ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Hadgrove.
Thank you. And to begin, I have to orient you by taking you back to the original popular music, which was opera back in the day. I think the 17th and 18th centuries, when people would go to the opera and that was their thing, and they'd laugh and talk and drink and fart and carry on, while there were huge, implausible plot lines and massive special effects exploding before them in a great big cacophony. However, the rich soon got wind of this and made it into a big hoi-polloi thing, and it was all very glamorous and all this kind of thing. So all of the players had to go and find some other outlet for all of their expression. And let's fast forward now to the 1950s and 60s, where there are three main points, you see, that contribute directly to global warming. The first is screaming. Now, when rock music came along, not only did music change, but people's reactions to it changed. They didn't talk, they didn't, you know, discuss things. They screamed out and out and out and out in stadiums or stadia, to use the proper term, everywhere, were just hotbeds of screaming everywhere. And the Beatles manager, Professor Brian Cox, realised that soon you didn't actually have to have music that was in any way coherent because nobody could hear it. So music became crapper and crapper and people's screams got louder and louder, which leads me to my second point, and that is haters gonna hate. The minute you have crap music, you have people complaining about it and discussing it. The internet over, boring talk shows over, Justin Bieber goes to jail and all this kind of thing, and it all contributes that there's only so much oxygen in the atmosphere. It brings me to my third point, too related, and that is the internet. The internet is possibly, this day and age, the single biggest contributor for it, not just because of people logging on to blog about things or to set up their Belieber homepages and that kind of thing, but I can't say directly what it is that the internet is for, because there are children in the audience. Suffice it to say that these children, in about every adult knows what I'm talking about.
So I definitely know what you're talking about.
7 years or so from now, the kids are going to know exactly what I mean. And there's a lot of that happening all around the world, thanks to the internet. Thank you very much. Listen, what's her name? This
one. Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus.
We're playing charades for the podcast. That's amazing.
What a wonderful wonderful impression.
Oh, she's such a good musician that she's known for her tongue. Go figure. She comes in like a wrecking ball, and we have that great big polar vortex. Coincidence? I think not. Ladies and gentlemen, act now. Disconnect your internet and stop listening to popular music, because it is only going to make Australia a dry, barren desert. Thank you very much.
Just like in circumstances, for instance, aeroplanes generate a lot more carbon than, say, cars do and so on, and therefore they contribute more to climate change. Is there particular types of music that contribute more to global warming than other types of...
Rihanna. Her voice can actually directly pierce holes in the ozone. It's a fact. I know these things. I went to Queensland Conservatorium back in
Well, somebody had to. Meow indeed. Our next speaker is Kerry Farnsworth, and your topic is the undiscovered missing link in animals. Ladies and gentlemen, Kerry Farnsworth.
Thank you. The undiscovered missing link. Now, too often evolutionary biologists and anthropologists have been seeking the undiscovered missing link between Bigfoot and humans. Wait, that's not the right way. Bigfoot is the missing link between humans and apes, right? But they have neglected the missing link that I personally am particularly fond of. It's been overfished for many years by generic food court Asian food places. And it is known as the oyster chicken. It is the missing link between mollusks and poultry. They both share the telltale beak. So like octopus have their tentacles, and in between tentacles there is nestled a little beak. The chickens have the beak. I'm pointing at my shirt, it has a chicken on it. They also exhibit very similar behaviour. The oyster chicken propels itself through the water like a scallop. So it kind of flaps its little shells and sort of puffs along, much in the way a chicken flutters up to its perch. Because they can't quite fly, nor can scallops quite swim. The oyster chicken makes its own sauce. Like a squid squirts its ink in order to deter enemies from eating it. And unfortunately, the oyster chicken sauce is so tasty, it just encourages the predators to eat it more. It's quite smoky. They also, like chickens and mollusks, share the same deep friable qualities. They can be enjoyed crumbed, battered, or just fried with sesame seed oil. Such delicious research. It may come as a surprise to you, but they also share a multi-purpose orifice for both their genitals. In chickens, it is a cloaca, and in lesser chickens, also known as reptiles, also have the cloaca. And in mollusks, they have something known as a mantle fold. Get that up here. We should... There is an absolute gap in the evolutionary biology industry to study these rare and exquisite creatures. And unfortunately, they are being hunted to near extinction, so we should all avoid eating the oyster chicken and try some Mongolian lamb instead.
I never knew science could be so arousing and make me hungry at the same time.
Well, clearly you have the right kind of science.
All those... the right kind of food.
I'm just curious to know that we've got the oyster chicken. Is there any other, or in fact maybe the panel also knows of any other missing links between types of food that you're familiar with?
Well, the Mongolian lamb is my favourite, just a herd of a sheep trying to take down the wall of China. That's singly most moving thing I've ever
they
seen.
They also grow black beans instead of wool.
Well, we're on to our next speaker, which is Scott McAteer, and your topic is Monstuberty, the terrifying nature of teenage monsterdom. So, ladies and gentlemen, Scott McAteer.
Now, I'm sure we're all familiar with the teenage monsters. Since the 1950s, there's been a slew of films, just to name a few. I Was a Teenage Werewolf, I Was a Teenage Frankenstein, Teenage Monster, Teenage Caveman, Monster on Campus, Teenage Zombies, Teenage from Outer Space, Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory, My Best Friend is a Vampire, Lost Boys, Teen Wolf, Carrie, The Craft, Ginger Snaps, and Jennifer's Body, just to name a few. Now, there's a reason for this, is that teenagers and monsters are totally compatible. Think about it. Sudden appearance of hair in places where it wasn't before. A teenager or a werewolf. Sudden obsession with people's bodily fluids. Teenagers or werewolf. Not being able to get out of bed without a hit of a lightning bolt up you. Teenager or werewolf. And there's actually a proper anthropological reason for this. It's the concept of liminality. Now, liminality is a term that's used for a shaman state, or a transitional state between one form and another. When people go through a ritual, they are essentially changed by that. And in the middle of that experience, they exist in two worlds, a liminal state. Liminal means threshold. You're probably familiar with the term subliminal, which means below the threshold. Liminal means being at the threshold. So it's about having a foot in both camps. And this is what monsters are like. They're always two things at once. A werewolf is both a man and a beast. A vampire is both a predator and a lover. A zombie is both alive and dead. And the Frankenstein monster is both a son and a sewing project. Teenagers are at a liminal stage in their life. They're both a child and an adult. They're already monsters. I have a theory that when teenage Mary Shelley was writing Frankenstein at 19, she was being partly autobiographical. But think about this. There are other liminal stages in our lives that we don't get monster stories about. I'm currently thinking of a werewolf story about a middle-aged man who's noticed the increasing back hair that he's gotten. Clearly he's turning into a werewolf. Perhaps there's a zombie story to be written about all those office workers who have finished their career and are just waiting until their retirement age. Pretty much they're already the walking dead, it's just that they've got files and they're waiting for a payout. Then there's that point in our 30s when we realise we're getting old and we have to be grown-ups and we wish we couldn't. If we were vampires, we could just eat popcorn in our underwear and play computer games all day and it wouldn't be a problem. So yes, monster puberty is scary. But it's time we saw the other monster times of life.
Is there any particular monster times of life that you particularly identify with?
I particularly identify with the werewolf one.
Oh, right.
Because it just explains so much. I mean, when I listen to people who have their iPods and you can hear the sound through their iPods, it never used to bother me. But now when they're listening to Kanye West and I can hear the Kanye West, it just drives right through me, and it's because I've got wolf hearing now.
I'm very tolerant, but it was a bit annoying that you had to urinate on the seats before.
Okay, well, this is our area. Okay. I know you're marking
my territory. Thank you very much.
You were happy when I was sniffing you.
Yes, I was.
Do you know in 90s popular music, Betty Boo metamorphosed into Marilyn Manson? Queensland.
Now, our final speaker for the first round is Rob Lloyd, and your topic is The Doctor is the Worst Kind of Person. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Lloyd!
For those of you that don't know, I'm a bit of a Doctor Who fan. For those of you that don't know Doctor Who, it's a science fiction show that's run for 50 years. It's very British, very quaint, and very lovely. The head writer and man in charge of Doctor Who at the moment has famously said that the Doctor is a god trying to be human. Oh, that's wonderful. But the more you look into it, I see him more as simply old, you know, Old Testament type of God, real Wrath of God type stuff, like from Cecil B. DeMille films, who just goes out to kill humans and destroy all mankind because he just leaves a path of carnage in his wake. I mean, just think about it. For those of you that don't know Doctor Who, let's go through it, okay? The Doctor is pretty much a guy who stole a time machine from his own people. He abducted his underage granddaughter. He then proceeded to pick up young, impressionable men and women and encourage them to join him in interfering with people all through time and space. Okay, he then left his granddaughter in a war field. Other companions have been left in the wrong part of England, have been so traumatised they ran away. Some have had their memories wiped. Some have been left in parallel dimensions with zeppelins in the sky. Some, if they even thought of the Doctor again, their head would explode. Their head would explode! Okay? Now, he can't even answer for his crimes from his own people. Why is that? Because he killed them! All! At the same time as he killed a race called the Daleks. Okay, now these two acts of genocide shouldn't be confused with the other acts of genocide that he committed in the classic series back in the 60s and 70s. Oh yeah, there are different categories to the Doctor's genocide. Now, he did find one of his own people from his own planet eventually in the end. Yeah, the Master. And what happened to the Master? The Master killed himself rather than live with the Doctor. So to answer your question, the Doctor, Doctor Who, is the worst monster in the history of the world. Okay. So why do we watch the worst person ever? Because we are terrified within an inch of our lives. If we stop, he will find us. Because one of his companions also had to marry Brian Blessed. Do you want to marry Brian Blessed? No. Stay, keep watching, because your life is screwed if you leave.
In terms of points in at the end of that round, Kerry is in the lead
by 180 degrees.
Our next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two, and they must apply their skills to an application task. Our first pairing will be Matt and Kerry. And now I'll be challenging you to diagnose. Now, as everyone in the room can see, we are now wheeling in the body of a corpse. For those at home, that's Sparky, our medical doc, who's clearly wheeling in this corpse. Thank you, Sparky. And you can see in front of you here, we've got a body, and I want you to diagnose why this particular person had died. Now, just to explain, clearly for the people at home, because obviously the people here can see, but she is a woman in her late 20s. She has brown hair. She has a tattoo of the numbers 4, 5, and 6 on her right arm. She has a twisted ankle and a false moustache.
Yes, indeed. The thing is, you haven't looked closely enough because he's going to be... All it takes is to look closer under that false moustache and find out that there is a real moustache bristling underneath.
It's just a little bit shorter than the false moustache.
A tiny little bit. There are children here, so I won't go into detail. Suffice it to say, it is actually a real woman. Not a real woman, I meant to say. If you look a little closer at in certain parts of it. Now, the thing... So we've got a fake moustache put on to look masculine again. This fake woman also has brown hair, which suggests that she's never bothered to dye it or use her real hair in any way. There has been some wig involved, as you can tell from the little dimplings around the back of the occipital bone.
That's the back of the head.
Went to Queensland, I know these things. Now, the 456 tattoo is a temporary one, or a tramp stamp, as you might like to know. I certainly know about these things. He's been down to the 456 club that's in Collingwood there, and has a twisted ankle from wearing shoes that are entirely
way too high.
way too big.
I know a high heel sprained ankle when I see one.
So what is your final diagnosis of death here?
This She-Man died of drag.
Matt and Kerry.
Alrighty, and we'll head over to Scott and Rob, and I'll be challenging you guys to a press conference. You'll be representing an organisation that's had a major news event, and I shall open up questions to the panel, and as well as myself. You are both archaeologists, you are clearly the top archaeologists in your field, and you have recently found fossils of mythological creatures. Mm. So my first question is, where did you find these fossils, and what do you believe they are?
Yeah.
Yes, well.
Well, they found them underneath a cult in the car park.
In the car park.
Yeah.
We were driving around in our Fiats, and there was a bit of a divot.
The bump.
There was a bump. Well, it's the opposite of a divot. I did spill my coffee all over my groin.
Yes.
It's the most excitement I've had down there for a long time.
Serious. Anyway, so we dug up where the hole was, and the long, thin, pointy thing was pointing up at us. And our first thought was,
hello, sailor.
and our second was unicorn.
Unicorn!
Yes.
Yes.
We often believe.
Oh, well, you believe.
I believe.
I believe too. Mm. That's why we are we.
Yeah.
But the unicorn is not a mythical creature.
No.
But in fact, existed many, many centuries ago, possibly Middle Ages. Jousting, ladies and gentlemen, is often believed to be a man on a horse holding a long lance, but no. We have facts that they actually rode horses with horns out of their head, and that's how jousting was created.
So if this was the case, what was Coles in the Middle Ages then? What was it? Why was it buried there?
Well, we believe Coles was a traditional gathering point, much as it is today.
Yes, 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 yes. Where the taxes were down. And surprisingly enough, status quo was still performing there.
And of course, I mean, with the jousting, if someone was wounded but didn't die, and they just were blooded, then they were special.
They were Red Spot special.
Yeah.
Brain just goes a lot, that's okay. That's really good. We just made that up then.
Yes.
Any questions from the rest of the panel? Yes.
I have a question now. What biological proof do you have that this is indeed a unicorn and not just a narwhal that got lost on its way to the shop?
That's great. Yes. That was our first thought.
Very good question. We have
our primary basis was first the lack of a aqua lung, or in reverse, a air lung, which are now I would use to get this far inland.
And we checked extensively where the horn was attached, and there was no blue tack at all as well. So it wasn't just a horse on the way to a fancy dress party. We do extensive tests, ladies and gentlemen. We're archaeologists, okay? It's not all fun and games like Indiana Jones, okay? I don't have a bullwhip. Well, I do, but that's what we use just in our own personal time, isn't it?
ladies and gentlemen, Scott and Rob. And at the end of that round, Matt is in the lead by Boltzmann's Constant. Our final round is called Stumble, Mumble or Bumble. This round has our panel put on the spot with some quick-fire ridiculous questions. If I feel they've stumbled, mumbled or bumbled, I shall make a noise like this, and I'll throw the topic to another panellist. We shall start with Rob Lloyd with the topic, what really is the Breakfast of Champions?
The Breakfast of Champions is obviously the tears of small children. Ian Thorpe used it. Neil Armstrong.
Too much bumbling there. We'll go over to Matt.
Oatmeal, because oatmeal is the most exciting breakfast you can possibly have. You can mix it with nice additives like flaxseed or perhaps a little bit of kale if you're feeling adventurous. I know that I am inspired to become a champion and run great distances and do all my scales, and I'm always told.
Thank you very much. Scott, monsters are bestsellers.
Oh, Stephen King was killed and brought back from the dead in 1998. It was a satanic rite conducted by him, Stephanie Meyer, Neil Armstrong, who did write a book which did bestsell. I mean, it's not a horror genre.
Gary.
Ding.
Well,
yes.
Thank you. I'm going to throw it back over to Kerry. The topic, let's all move to Sweden.
Well, of course we should all move to Sweden. I mean, the people are just so pretty. Such lovely skin and fine cheekbones. You could just stare at them all day instead of going to Centrelink.
Just listen to Sweden. What good bands have not come out of Sweden? ABBA. What are they called? The Cargers. Everyone freaking
Rock
comes set. From Sweden.
Rock set. And of course, as always, you know that all Swedish people, as from my only source of education, the Muppets, they all are great cooks.
And they're coherent.
It must have been learned, but it's over now.
in the lead with that, with our convincing argument about Sweden there. But I will have to total the points. But before we do, it is now time to reveal the answer to our Grain of Truth Connection Challenge. Now, first of all, on the panel, did anyone get the connection between music, animals, monsters, and heroes?
I think I know.
There's several exciting things. Let's start with Matt Hedgrove.
The Rocky Horror Show.
Oh, God, explain.
What? Need I? Music, animals, monsters, and heroes. The Rocky Horror Show!
Oh,
you know, 2+2.
Oh, fabulous. Kerry, what were you suggesting?
Mine was the Muppets. Animal.
That's the most sedated version of it. Animal.
That is the beat version of it.
Animal.
What was your suggestion?
I think it's David Bowie.
Oh, explain why.
David Bowie had a song with Nine Inch Nails called Scary Monsters and Super Freaks. He, of course, sang We Can Be Heroes Just for One Day. He's involved in music in some capacity, I understand. And animals, he had a song called Nature Boy as well. Plus, you mentioned Nikola Tesla, and he did play Tesla in a...
Well,
the prestige.
Well, actually, I'll have to give Scott some extra points there because that was indeed one of, there was in fact two possible links. David Bowie was certainly one. He is a musician, We Can Be Heroes being the song, and his 14th studio album was Scary Monsters and Scary Creeps. But he has got an animal named after him. There's a rare yellow spider which was named after him called the Heteropooda David Bowie.
Have two different coloured eyes.
I didn't go that far.
Heteropoda would have like two different coloured feet, I think.
And of course, he played Tesla in The Prestige. But the other link that could be made here would be Thomas Edison. Because Thomas Edison was the inventor of the phonograph, as in music, is considered to be the hero of inventors, as he was the most prolific, or perhaps he just stole most of them. However, what he did to animals made him the monster, though. To try and put Tesla out, into disrepute with Nikola Tesla came up with the alternating current, he decided to prove that Tesla was wrong by electrocuting an elephant. So that they could demonstrate that direct current, or Thomas Edison's brand of electricity, was safer.
Another point is Thomas Edison's company did make the first film adaptation of Frankenstein.
Well, there we go. And that just ticks so many boxes it explodes.
Did you know, musically, the soundtrack for the film of the elephant being electrocuted was used on the Funniest Home Video program? I like how everyone's feeling so sad for the elephant.
That's a great...
The elephant was a murderer. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
he was actually a murderer. Yeah, sorry, was actually a murderer.
You're all awful. Well, it just remains me to total up the points, and the winner of our Terchokken is Kerry Farnsworth! Enjoyed it, you can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of every month at 1 p.m. here at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow. It just leaves me now to thank our panel, Matthew Hadgraft, Kerry Farnsworth, Scott McAteer, Rob Lloyd, our announcer Tim Redmond, our composer Matthew Hadgraft, Damien Sutton and Wesleyan. I've been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day!
Oyster Chicken Production.
Sit, Sparky, sit.
Good dog.